Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and on the line we have Simone Casey, who is a research associate with the Future Social Service Institute with RMIT University, and she was also previously, I think she was also previously a policy advisor as a, for the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, although she could probably correct me on that, and she's recently written an article on the impacts of the ending of JobSeeker and JobKeeper. So, yeah, good morning, Simone.
Yeah, good morning, Jacob, and good morning, 3CR listeners.
Okay, so just to get on to my first kind of question, in your kind of article, you kind of talk about, I guess, to kind of start off this kind of discussion, what can you tell us about, I guess, the kind of social impacts of the ending of JobKeeper and the reduction of JobSeeker payment rates, which is happening as of yesterday, well, the day before yesterday, really, and of course, in terms of individuals' income and the kind of social effects associated with this?
Yeah, well, there's actually three major things to take account of. So the article that we, my colleague and I, Liz Ralston, publishing The Conversation, was really looking at the impact of the policy changes on the removal of JobKeeper and the reduction in JobSeeker on rentals. But the third policy change is the revocal of the rental moratoriums as well. So what we were concerned about modelling in that article was really the impact of these policy changes on some of the critical things that happen to people when they're in poverty, which includes rental stress. And people in rental stress often end up homeless because they, you know, obviously can't afford to pay the rent. So we were very concerned about the impact of all three of these changes, the temporary increases in payments, the JobKeeper wage subsidy, and the revocation of the moratoriums on rent, which all happened in the last 2 weeks. So it's a pretty dire situation for people who are not able to get enough work. Yeah.
And I want to kind of hear, I guess, because you just mentioned, I guess, the housing kind of moratorium. Well, basically the ending of the kind of eviction basically, because I think previously there was a ban on, I guess, evictions. And I guess I want to kind of hear a bit more detail about some of the issues relating to rental affordability and the rolling back of these schemes. Because it's sort of, it's a bit interesting, just a bit of a personal anecdote. As someone who's just looked for a house recently, it appears there's this sort of bizarre situation in the inner city where, you know, there is actually a lot of places available in terms of housing, but of course there is obviously what is it going to mean in terms of the rolling back of these schemes if people are not able to afford to rent places?
Yeah, so I guess it depends what kind of housing you're looking for in the rental market. So there has been a change because of COVID, especially in the inner cities, in like apartments. Because all the overseas students are, you know, who usually attend the universities have gone back home. But my colleague Liz, who does a lot of work around modelling rental affordability, hasn't really noticed a great change across the cities, and even in regional areas, there hasn't been a major reduction in rent across the board, especially in the kind of share house market, which tends to be sort of, you know, in the middle regions around the cities. So there hasn't been really enough of a reduction in rents to make housing affordable to most people on low incomes. So there, you know, there's obviously some variation in the rental market, as I said, but it's not really looking like it's got much easier. And before COVID, we had already been doing modelling which showed that rentals were unaffordable in most capital cities for people on low incomes. And by people on low incomes, we were looking at both people on surviving on what's now JobSeeker payment, but also on, you know, people on casual, low-paid casual jobs, which, you know, students, you know, people who are employed and underemployed. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if that aligns with your own experience, Jacob, in trying to find somewhere to rent around inner Melbourne. Be interested to hear your feedback on that.
Oh, I think everything you said is completely fine, actually. My experience is just a bit particular because I was only looking for a place for me and my partner. So, obviously, two-bedroom apartments are all the rogue. And there's more available than people looking for them. Yeah. And we've all, and that relates to obviously all the kind of reasons listed, but obviously rental affordability is still a major issue. And I imagine with the rolling back of JobSeeker and everything, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah. And you're in, actually like one of the more fortunate situations because you're in a couple, which means that you're both, depending on what your income is, you may both be eligible for CRA, and during the, if you were on unemployment payments, for example, during the COVID period, you would have both been receiving the supplements. And although the supplements decreased over the period of, you know, the COVID, there were like three changes in the amount before they were finally withdrawn this week. You would have both, you know, had that income supplemented, but a single person or a single parent would be the only person in that household who would have been receiving either a supplement or a CRA. And so one of the things that we pointed out in our analysis in the conversation was that single parent families had been particularly badly off. And some analysis that I've seen from my friend Liz, as I say, who did the analysis on the statistical analysis, has shown that more single parents rent as a proportion of the population than other people on job seeker payments. So they're doing it tough.
And I want to go into, a bit of a kind of discussion around JobKeeper, because in your article, just to make a general kind of comment first, I mean, one of the contexts is the media has kind of reported quite often that JobKeeper has been a lifeline for many jobs, and especially, you know, the nature of our capitalist kind of system. There's like the, you know, basically for businesses to kind of survive, they need to basically turn a profit. And of course, the effects of this pandemic has kind of meant that there were certain businesses that have been shown to not be profitable in the kind of particular post kind of pandemic kind of context. But of course, the implementation of JobKeeper meant that for some of these jobs in that category, it was basically kind of a lifelong for these jobs to even still exist. And of course, now that JobKeeper is being cut, there's estimates that thousands of jobs will be lost forever when JobKeeper ends. And I guess what has your kind of research and what you've kind of observed shown in terms of this?
Oh, well, you're absolutely right. Like, JobKeeper did prop up some businesses that would have folded anyway, and zombie businesses, I think they call them. So there's a turnover of businesses, you know, generally have a life cycle of surviving or not surviving, and so they were kind of, you know, I guess kept in hibernation. But also there, because of the economic shock with the shutdowns, and the way that population is redistributing the way it works so that, you know, more people are working back in their homes, then that business activity has not returned to the cities. So, you know, there's businesses across the cities in hospitality, you know, coffee places, et cetera, that just are not viable. So the Economist's Treasury, they're expecting nationally around 250,000 jobs will go because of the withdrawal of JobKeeper. And Melbourne, it will be because we had like the slowest economic recovery and probably one of the most significant changes in patterns of working. At least half of those jobs will be lost in Melbourne. So that's another, you know, maybe 120,000 people hitting the unemployment queue, you know, looking for work, competing for work with all the other people who are already unemployed. So we'll see probably a spike in unemployment. Hopefully those people will get jobs again easily. But what that means for other people who haven't been able to find jobs easily is that they go back to the back of the queue, which is the problem that we had with long-term unemployment. It's kind of a self-perpetuating problem that the most recently unemployed do get work more easily than the long-term unemployed, and the long-term unemployed become even longer term unemployed, and you know, it affects their employability. So we need strategies to assist job creation for the long-term unemployed, as well as you know, things that inject more money into the economy.
Simone, have you looked at the idea of a job guarantee, and would you have any thoughts around that type of policy?
Well, there's a kind of quite a few different models of a job guarantee that I've seen around, and certainly various places I've been involved in have advocated for that. So you're right, I was an policy advisor at the Unemployed Workers Union for a while, but that's been a year or so since I've been in that role, and the Unemployed Workers Union were looking at a new deal, Green New Deal, which was a, you know, youth guarantee in renewable sort of sectors, creating jobs growth in those sectors and providing jobs for people. There's also a long-term unemployed job guarantee idea around, and there's also the idea of a youth jobs guarantee. And I think any kind of job guarantee for people who need one is worth looking at. I worked in this sector around employment programs for a long time, and I'm just like, you just have to be very careful about the detail, because I wouldn't be supporting anything that was a mandatory program like we have at the moment, Work for the Dole. I would only be supporting programs that provide people with a livable wage that's, you know, benchmarked against industrial agreements in terms of what people are being paid. But yes, you know, we are at a stage now where in policy terms we need to look at the range of options that are available to us, and we need to have the political will to invest in those options. And what we're seeing at the moment is a government that's letting everything return to the market, to market generate these jobs. And so it's a very concerning time for people who haven't been successful in that, you know, market framework, and I do believe that there's a need to look at that problem.
Okay, so we're kind of running a bit out of time, but I'll give an opportunity to kind of ask the last kind of planned question, and you kind of went into it kind of already. I kind of want to hear you in terms of like all the kind of social impacts. What are some of the things that the government could be doing? And, of course, you already alluded to some of that in response to Zane's question before. And, of course, after that, any kind of final comments you kind of like to make?
Well, really, you know, this is a question. We're focusing on rental affordability, but we need not forget that not everybody is in rental. Some people have mortgages and they are in stress as well. So really the options that have been canvassed by many other people, like it's been a cacophony of voices saying we need to lift the base rate of unemployment payments above the poverty line. We could also increase Commonwealth rent assistance, and we also in the short term need to look at things like grants to people who are in poverty to help them get through to pay their rent for 6 months. And then over the longer term, increase the supply of social housing. I mean, they're the most immediate responses that we need.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Simone. Are there just any final comments you'd like to make?
No, I think, you know, anybody who's listening to the news, you'll have seen a lot of material around about this. So, you know, just keep your eyes open and eyes and ears open, and keep on thinking about and contributing to the conversation about the reforms we need.
Sweet. All right. Thanks heaps for talking with us, Simone.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.